and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 529. We're back. My name's James Gilmore. Joining me today, it's Matthew Forge.
Hello.
We're going to say, at the start of the show, a quick requiem, a quick post-mortem, a quick funeral. What do you call it? Dirge? That sounds negative. But
yeah, if you like.
All of this is to say, Rick Cowley fans, I'm afraid that Rick will not be returning to the show anymore. Rick has left.
Again.
He has a habit of doing this. But
we had a goodbye episode once. We can't do it again.
I know. He's milking at this point. He'll be back again. Don't worry. But yes, he has left PG and Pocket Gamer Biz, and he's headed off onto pastures new. You'll still find him over on Twitter and everything like that. But he wanted me to pass on his farewells, because this happened while we were doing the Pocket Gamer Connects conference stuff. So we didn't have a show that week, and that would have been the kind of farewell week. But he had to go. So he sends his love. And all of his best. And we will, of course, miss him until he, you know, comes back in 6 months. We know how he works. But Matthew's still here. You're stuck with me and Matthew. So deal with it.
Yeah, we apologize in advance.
I apologize for nothing. Suck it up, losers. So we didn't have a show last week, so apologies for that. But as we mentioned before, Pocket Gamer Connects Digital, another great week, full of loads of stuff, incredibly stressful, three tracks at any given time. We might just do two tracks next show, because having to manage three different digital rooms of talks going on simultaneously was challenging.
I bet.
But record numbers and all that good stuff to hear. So, and videos will be up on Pocket Gamer Biz if you want to learn about making games and games business and releasing games in China and all every aspect of it. It'll all be up there, so you can go and check it out. We won't be talking about that this week, though, because we've got a fortnight's worth of gaming news to cover. And while we were occupied in our own little sphere, everything else went mental. Next generation consoles were announced, and then pre-orders were suddenly opened by surprise, and nobody got any, and then they were planned and they were opened, and then nobody got any because the sites crashed, and then we expected new releases of exciting new exclusive games, and there weren't any. And then Amazon was like, we do games now as well, you've heard of Stadia, welcome to Luna. And it's going nuts.
It's all happening.
It is. So we'll be talking about a bit of that Luna business. We'll be talking about Blackpink coming to PUBG. That's the whole story, really. I've done it there. And maybe a bit of Nier Reincarnation coming to the West. That's exciting stuff. Plus, new releases from the past couple of weeks, including the likes of Rip Them Off. We've got a bit of Ord. We'll bring you Songbringer, Rowdy City Wrestling, and maybe even a bit of that Harry Potter game if we can bring ourselves to discuss it. But first, it's the news. We are known for taking a little pop at Stadia on this podcast in a good-hearted, friendly sort of way.
Mm.
In a
kick them while they're down sort of thing.
Yeah, great idea. Where are the games? Kind of way. And then, of course, Project X Cloud, which becomes the basically bundled in with the Game Pass and everything that's happening with all the next-gen stuff. Like, hey, Microsoft's acquired Bethesda. That's kind of an enormous deal. And that then gets bundled into the Game Pass, which you can play on your mobile devices if you've got an Android. So you can play Skyrim on your phone now as part of a subscription. This is the new world in which we live. So now Stadia seems a little bit antiquated before it's even really started.
Mm. Coming up to a year as well.
Is it that long?
Yeah, November it'll be.
Well, to further pile dust onto the Stadia controller that's sitting in the corner of your room not being used, Amazon has waded into the fray with its own cloud gaming service. This one's called Luna. And it's the same deal, really. They're selling it on the basis of, like, pay a subscription, here's a controller, you can play it on your smart TV, you can play it on your laptop, you can play it on your mobile, your tablet, and all that. So the same principles apply. The difference here seems to be the amount of stuff that they're offering versus Stadia.
On day one, especially. Yeah, it's very impressive in comparison to that. I still think, obviously, xCloud has the upper hand. They've got an introductory price now of $5.99 a month, which itself is a good price, better than Stadia.
Yep.
And then they've got 4K 60 frames per second resolution for select titles. And the titles at hand are pretty good. I mean, they're all old, in gaming world old, as in, like, they've been out for some time already. But, you know, not every play is every game, so therefore they will be new to some people. The interesting thing is that you actually subscribe to certain channels under Luna. as opposed to like one big subscription.
Yeah.
So it's Luna Plus.
It's how Amazon does their service with video streaming. So you subscribe to Amazon Prime for a monthly fee to watch their Amazon Prime stuff. But then within that, you can subscribe to Shudder, or you can subscribe to MGM or to Arrow Video, or you can buy certain individual subscriptions under that umbrella. In this case, they're talking about the ability to play Ubisoft games. So you'd buy a separate Ubisoft subscription within your base thing. But the base for £5.99, $5.99 sub includes things like Control. You know, the recently released very good Remedy game.
Brilliant.
And they've got the stuff listed includes things like The Surge 2. You've got Grid, Resident Evil 7, Abzu, Brothers, Tale of Two Sons. All of which I think are just like, yeah, we've seen this stuff. In the little picture, you can see images of like Sexy Brutale, which is quite an interesting little game. Tacoma, Metro Last Light. These are popping up on the screen. So they haven't done the full announcement list. But even then, they're releasing with over 100 games, which has already trounced Stadia.
Yes.
Which has, I like, in terms of what's included within the subscription, it was like 12 or something when it launched.
Yeah, and the difference is that you had to purchase the games on top of that.
Yeah, you had to buy
40
grid.
As opposed to this is just like one payment and that's it. One thing I'd like to give a shout out to that I actually really like is the controller.
Yeah, it's fine. It just looks it's another Xbox controller.
It's not. It's a Switch Pro controller. It's identical to it.
But a Switch Pro controller is itself an Xbox controller. Like it's the same kind of.
Not really.
Yes, it is. It's got the analog sticks at that disjointed angle, which is always the wall between Xbox and PS4. Do you want your analog sticks on the same plane next to each other? Do you want one up and one down? It's got a little D-pad. It's got four buttons in the top face. It's the same controller.
I think
it's a different color.
But...
it's not even a different color. It's still gray.
Purple and
it's
black.
It's got
that.
Purple bits in it. These are all the same controllers. Like I've got no idea why people give a toss. Like the Stadia one as well. It's just an Xbox controller. It's just orange and white. Like, fundamentally, functionally, they've got all the same buttons on them in the same place.
Yeah. If you thought of a controller, that is literally what this one looks like. It's very generic.
Until, like, you go back to things like, I guess the GameCube had a slightly weird one because of the way the buttons were placed. But really, you have to go back to something
Wii.
Like the... yeah, you have to go to the Wii and you have to go specifically the N64.
Mm.
For a genuine, like, for three-handed aliens with a thing in the middle, for a genuine, like, shake-up of, okay, that's a unique controller.
Yes.
That doesn't play like the other ones does. No. From this point onwards, they're all just, like, exactly the same thing, but we'll move this a nanometer to the left and make it bullet grey instead of gunmetal grey. You're like, this is the same crap. Sorry, I'm being dismissive.
I like it.
Cool, good. I like the Xbox controller as well, Matthew. That's what all these are. It's a good controller. That's why they're all copying it. Yeah, but the thing that makes this much more interesting or much more promising than something like Stadia is people are already bought into the Amazon ecosystem. That's what makes this interesting. People are already subscribed to Amazon Prime for their purchases. They're already subscribed to Amazon Prime for watching all their video stuff. And all that's going to happen is in the same menus, in the same place, in the same system that you already use, an extra little thing will pop up and be like, do you want to play the games? Bloop, subscribe. Like, and that makes the accessibility of it or the likelihood for you to go, yeah, all right, I'll give it a go. That much higher, so much higher. If they were really, really smart, this would just be bundled in with Prime.
Yes.
Like, I see no reason that, obviously, it's expensive, that's why there's
or
a reason.
Or as an add-on, yeah.
Yeah, but as you've probably noticed, if you looked at any of the numbers, the amount of money that Amazon's made over the past 6 months due to the corona, the spike, the acquisition of the number of billions they've gone up in market value is ridiculous. So they could... just bundle this in. Or as you say, maybe you pay like a quid, 2 quid more a month to get this. That's your top up to get all the games up. That would be huge. If you want to really genuinely push this in front of everybody and have everybody playing it, that's the way that you do it. Get that bundled in and then everyone will just have it and they'll get involved. Which is exactly what Microsoft has kind of done with this Game Pass stuff. They've made the Game Pass too good not to have. By going, oh, we've got all the stuff included. Hey, EA, the EA Game Pass is now included. You're like, that's incredible. I've got all the EA games now.
And
I'm like,
Bethesda
and we just
games.
Bought Bethesda.
Yeah.
So clearly all their stuff's going to come in as well. Like, this is insane. Like, that's such a like value prospect.
Yep. No better deal in gaming.
Yeah, I'm losing money by not subscribing to this service. Like, they've made it so attractive that you kind of can't not have it. And that's what you need to do. Just make it attractive. And then go, oh, and by the way, just download the Xbox app and play it on your, not yellow, because I didn't buy this. This is a company phone. Ugly.
Sure.
But you can just download it onto your phone. And that's the other thing that makes this interesting, makes Luna interesting, which is, at the moment, the Xbox Game Pass, you can play it on the Android handset. Mm-hmm. Can't play it on iOS, as we've talked about in the past. The Amazon announcement explicitly states it's coming to iPhone and iPad. So how has Amazon been able to sneak its way through where Xbox has not?
Well, they sort of have a history for this. They had this with the Amazon Kindle app, I believe, where they cut a deal with Apple where they only pay 15% fees as opposed to 30%.
Because it's a shop within a shop.
Yes. So it seems like they're just going to do that exactly the same again.
Yeah.
And it does leave the likes of like xCloud and Stadia, I imagine, being very miffed and annoyed. And yeah, why can't we get one? But it's clear why, because Amazon's a giant powerhouse and Jeff Bezos has money dropping out of his pockets every step of the way.
Yes, it is the sheer scale of Amazon, the power of that. Like the Amazon, not even just the Prime, but the shopping app, you know.
I mean, the other thing with Amazon is I'd be more likely to invest in their ecosystem, because that's always a risk when a new service arrives. It's like, do I want to risk investing lots of money in it and then two, three years, which has done in the past with certain products. And
this controller you're talking about is Alexa enabled, because of course it is. And it connects directly to the Wi-Fi for uninterrupted lower latency gaming.
Do you think she'll be like Navi out of Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, just constantly?
Hey, I do hope not.
Play this. Hey, yeah. Play that.
And it'll be $50 during early access. I have to see when it comes. There's no date yet. You can do an invitation for a testing phase if you're in the US right now, but expect to see this appearing. Maybe before the end of the year, early next year, I'm going to say. What else have we got going on here? PUBG. Oh, yeah. PUBG Mobile is collaborating with Blackpink. This just made
me
laugh.
Who is Blackpink?
You know who Blackpink is, do you?
I don't know who Blackpink is.
Ah, oh, hit me with that do-do-do-do-do. No, nope. Just me? Okay, fine.
Just so, you.
Blackpink are one of the biggest bands in the world at the moment.
Okay.
K-pop band, which has been, you know, big internationally in a way and broken through in the West and the US in a way that like some K-pop and other international artists, J-pop, that sort of stuff, is starting to find its way into, you know, like BTS. Like, you know,
I was
BTS,
gonna say,
right?
I know BTS, yeah.
Where,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, 3-4 years ago, you wouldn't know who BTS were. You and I wouldn't know who BTS were. But
we just get the likes of, like, Psy. Like with a Gangnam Style, that sort of odd song now and then would break through.
Which even back then, like even in his native country, was a novelty, kind of a novelty song, a novelty act. But no, these are like world conquering pop stars. And these guys, actually, they've got a couple of bangers, to be fair to them. There's a lot of K-pop that I find fascinating because it's a genre where they will switch genre every like 16 bars. It's like... each one of their number, there's four of them, and they all seem to exist. Like one of them's the balladeer, one of them's the grime rapper, one of them's like, and they bounce between. So it's like engineered for maximum appeal in the same way that Songs in the West, early on, we started doing this about a kind of like 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, I think, it became incredibly popular to do verse, chorus, rap breakdown featuring rap artist. And then go back to the chorus, key change, double chorus. And now that's just standard. Like, that's just every song is so-and-so, fit so-and-so, and so-and-so. Like, it's always like 15 people on the same goddamn song doing their bars. And it's a way to bring like, oh, this pop, people going, oh, it's a pop song and I don't like this. And then suddenly it changes genre to a genre you like, and now you're engaged. So it's just maximizing
audience,
product appeal. And that's what these do incredibly well to me, it feels like. It's like you would look at it and go, oh, it's sugar, candy, floss, pop. And then there's the grind breakdown.
It looked like Little Mix off the bat. like that version.
Well, in terms of it, just like you obviously being a manufactured girl band, yeah. But I think like K-pop, it has this slightly like, I don't know, hyperpop's a term being thrown around a lot at the moment, which is a genre I quite like a lot of, like 100 Gex and, or is it 1,000 Gex? I forget which. And Charlie XCX, the most recent album, which I really like as well. But it's all beside the point. The point is that they are turning up in PUBG, of all places. This comes just after, like, Garena Free Fire's announced the big pairing with some pop person. And, of course, Fortnite teaming up with their artists. And they're bringing pop people into shooters, into Battle Royale shooters. And
Roblox has just announced them a concert as well, I believe.
Oh, really?
Okay. I can't remember the artist off the top of my head. It was a blonde singer. That's all I can remember. But narrows it down, I know. It was that Fortnite thing that started it off, the big in-game concerts, and it seems like everybody seems to jump in on the bandwagon.
Yeah. So this one's going to have specially themed in-game items, visual, lobby music, and a variety of events. And you'll be able to listen to their new single, How You Like That, in the game's lobby. I'm slightly annoyed that I don't get to play as one of the Blackpink girls. I think they're missing a trick there if they didn't put the skin in. And they let me shoot Rose. Let me. I'm sure that's not in their contract. They're not going to allow you to do that. In the same way that those car manufacturers like won't let Gran Turismo show the cars being damaged.
Right. Yeah.
Because it affects the brand. Like, we can't have Rose getting headshotted for chicken dinner. This will damage.
The only one of them I've heard is that, what is it, Vin Diesel and The Rock can't get punched in the face or something ever.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, they can never get knocked down.
No, it damages the brand.
Or they can only receive a certain amount of punches each movie. Crazy.
You have to count. Yes, so that's kicking in very soon. I just mentioned it because I found it funny and pink. In slightly more fun news, Nier Reincarnation is available to pre-register. So this is happening in Japan at the moment. We talked about the reveal of the game, which actually looked, as we said, like much more 3D and like a traditional Nier game than we expected for mobile, but fair play. And we were wondering, like, will it ever come over here? What's going to happen with it? So what we now have discovered is that the pre-registration's opening for both platforms in Japan, and it will be coming to the West. We have got official confirmation. This is because a Tokyo Game Show is running at the moment. So we're getting a lot of news pouring out of there. So if you are waiting for your Nier, then you will be able to get hold of it in the West, as we kind of hoped.
It's getting nearer and nearer, you could say.
And, of course, this comes alongside the announcement of Nier. Remind me, what was it? The one with all the numbers?
Reincarnation?
No, that's this one we just said.
That's this one.
There's another Nier. I'm going to have to Google it. Nier Replicant.
Nier Replicant.
That's the remake.
2.9174321 thing. Yeah.
So that's a remake of one of their previous games, I think. I'm not 100% in all the Nier lore, but that's what I believe it is.
The first one. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. So yes, you can get all your Nier business in the not too distant.
Say it, James.
No, not too distant future. Out and about this week, we talked about the announcement of the new Mario games, the little triple bundle that appeared in Mario All-Stars 3D, and Rick was downloading it as we were literally conducting the last podcast. It's been a fortnight. Obviously, the most Nintendo boy I know, Matthew Ford, has been playing away for the past fortnight. What are our feelings on this? Has Nintendo done as good a job as they did with the original Mario All-Stars?
No, not even close in that respect. I mean, let's say this off the bat. Super Mario 64 is an amazing game. Sunshine is a great game that I have huge nostalgia for. I remember the first time it came out, I was 9 years old. A young pup, some might say. This is now nearly 20 years later for me. And the nostalgia has worn off a little bit, which I'm disappointed to say, but it's still got a special place in my heart. And I think Galaxy is one of the best games ever to come out, personally, and definitely one of the best 3D platformers ever. And the price, I think, is sort of reasonable in a way, but there's just nothing extra. It's literally the three games, and you get three soundtracks, and it's just like a cheap... It's literally a port. They've done the bare minimum. Mario 64 has not been upscaled even to 16:9.
Yeah, I know that one was still 4:3, but
yeah.
So there's been no...
They're in HD now to some extent. I mean, Galaxy is the one that really benefits, although that's the one I've spent the least time with. So I've been playing Super Mario 64 because I'm going through them one by one.
Okay.
I did this last night. I got 120 stars completed. So 100% did it. Got Yoshi on the roof and everything. Really touching moment. Love to see the lizards again. And got all the 99 lives. And yeah, loved it. What a fantastic accomplishment of a game that it holds up.
It's a good. That's one of the games I did. I have played through. I did get all the stars. It was a very nice time on the DS. I did it. But lovely. Yeah.
Yes. 64x4, wasn't it? Yeah. That was great as well. And then I jumped into Sunshine last night. Played about 2 hours and I got to about 20 shine sprites, which you get. And the amount of bugs in that game that I don't remember as a kid, because obviously as a kid you just everything seems fantastic and wonderful, and I'm just walking around going, oh my god, like everything's breaking. Like there's a lighthouse covered in lots of goop, because at Super Mario Sunshine you have a water pack on your back called Flood. Okay. And the aim of the game is Mario goes on holiday and there's somebody going around pretending to be Mario and graffitiing the island of Delfina, and it's up to Mario to clean up. But there's, this lighthouse that's covered in goop and it doesn't raise out of the ground until you get rid of the goop. But I was just climbing on loads of rooftops and I looked across, and I put this up on my Twitter, actually, a video of it, and I looked across and then you could just see the top of the lighthouse just, and then nothing underneath it, just invisible. So I was like, can I jump to that and reach it? So I did like a spin jump and like just grabbed onto the edge and I just stood on absolutely nothing. I was like,
okay.
Because apparently the game was famously rushed back in the day.
Yes, I've seen nothing but clips from people like furious at Sunshine, either doing what you did, which is, I remember loving this, but hang on, this is broken. And other people who are like, look, this game was always rubbish. The idea that it's some secret amazing gem that nobody's noticed or people have looked over is nonsense. It wasn't very good to begin with, ever. And it was buggy as hell. Now, I don't know. Yeah. I haven't played, so I've seen online.
It's just not as polished as what Nintendo's known for. That's the thing. But overall, I still love the game. I think Sunshine's brimming with personality, and I do enjoy a lot of the world it offers and everything like that. And I think the flood mechanics are fun and create some very unusual platforming that we don't get. It does add an edge to it, and I don't think it makes it more difficult. And there's a lot of levels later on that I think are some of the most difficult in Mario games. Mm.
But this is criticism of like the game itself as it was back in the day. In terms of this, like the redo, it doesn't sound like, and I've heard this as well, like they just haven't done anything. It's just, here are the original games. They haven't upscaled it. They haven't gone in and done new textures. They haven't like done a remake, in the same way that remake can be misleading at the moment, because when you see something like, for example, the Resi remakes, where they've literally gone in and remade the games from the ground up, where it's like it's the same basic idea, it's the same locations, in some cases it's the same layout, but sometimes it isn't. It's like almost a whole new game built around this. That's very much not what this is. It's just here are
it's
the
just
exact same
carbon
games,
copy and paste. Yes,
just running.
And that's why it is a shame, because they have put the All Stars label on it, and that does have high merit.
Because
that
did go in and change the graphics of certain old games, didn't it? Yeah,
the original Super Mario Brothers. Yes, they fully redid that, and I think they did a couple of things to 2 and 3 as well. And I think they added lost levels as well, which was a big thing that had never come to the West at the time, I believe. So again, there's no Galaxy 2 in it, which is a bit. I'm not a huge fan of Galaxy 2, so I'm not. But it should be there at the end of the day. Mm. And then 3D Worlds is coming separately, but again, that's sort of halfway between the 2D and the 3D ones. I always think is. But again, we expect more from Nintendo with something like this, because I always think they're actually quite good with DLC in these sort of packages. In the past, the Wind Waker HD. They added a bit and changed a bit and refined a lot of elements, and they've refined nothing here, which is a shame, because Mario deserves more respect and these games deserve more respect.
Well, that's about what I've heard from other people, so that sounds familiar. People still obviously enjoying it and they're great games and whatnot, but
fantastic games.
It could have been more.
Can't wait to get to Galaxy.
Which is a bit of a shame. All right, fair enough. There's your official Mario take from the Nintendo boy. Let's talk about straight mobile stuff a little bit. I'm going to go completely the other end, and we're talking about sort of 3D games that are revolutionary and doing interesting things with mechanics and visuals. I've been playing a game called Ord, which is a game which is a black screen that shows no more than 3 words on it at any one time.
Okay.
This is an RPG, like a choose your own adventure style RPG, right? And rather than reading a paragraph of some, text that pops up on the screen going, you walk into a room, it's dark and cold and drafty, there's a table in front of you and there is a book on the table. Do you choose to open the book or do you back away from the tome because it glimmers sinisterly? That kind of stuff. And then you have 2 or 3 choices and you do what you want. This doesn't do that. This goes, it puts a word at the top of the screen and it says portal. And then it has a gap and then two words beneath it. And one of them says roars and one of them says wait. That's it. That's your screen. So what it's telling you is there is a portal in front of you. Through that portal, you can hear the sound of roars. So if you hit the word roars, you're going through the portal.
Okay.
Or
so very minimalist.
Wait. That's your other option where you're self-explanatory. Yeah. Incredibly minimalist. And the entire adventure plays out like that. So you get a situation where it says, the beginning of the adventure will say you wake up and then the screen will just be like dark. And then you have two options, which will be like look, touch. So if you hit look and then it'll come over and it'll say door. Mm-hmm. And then beneath door, it'll say, listen, open.
So it's relying heavily on your imagination.
Massively so, which is kind of why I like it. It is boiling the idea of a text adventure down to its absolute bare essentials and then forcing you to picture stuff and do a little bit more work than usually you have to do. The whole thing with video games and any kind of visual medium is often the weight is taken off of your imagination because all you need to do is sit down and go blah and the screen shows you everything. And we're, chasing that whole, show it to me in 4K, in 8K, give me ray tracing. I want it to be as realistic as possible, like I'm looking out a window. And this is going way back to the, nope, we're going to give you one word and you have to paint a picture in your brain of what this room looks like and where you are and what you're doing. I like doing that. I am an RPG person. I like playing actual tabletop RPGs and stuff like that. And that's what you do there. The nice thing about this is it fits the mobile form so quickly because you can go through the adventure so fast because you're just given one word and you're, okay, right, make a decision. Next word, right, door. Okay, next, make a decision. You're not wading through paragraphs and paragraphs of possibly not very good, possibly overwritten text or hack kind of fantasy stuff. You're just given these absolute bare essentials and you can power through and they all play out differently. You get four adventures at the beginning where you have four different words describing different scenarios and then you go through them and you can play through them all and you die a lot. You very easy to die in this and you have to go back through again and find different routes and all that kind of stuff.
Is there an actual time limit on your responses or is this something you're just putting on yourself?
You're putting on yourself. No, I haven't encountered any. I've stopped and waited and the game's never got shirty with me. But it's just that after a while you find yourself doing it quite rhythmically and you play it quite quickly. In the same way that you play something like Reigns, Your Majesty, where, a short sentence and you're like, swipe left, swipe right. After a while, you pass the information quite quickly. You're like, yep, nope, yep, yep, nope, nope. And again, that's why you can bust through an entire adventure where you die and encounter all this different stuff in the space of 120 seconds. And I find that fascinating. And I love the idea of I've always liked the theater of the mind. I like the idea of making you work a little bit and that can actually be more effective at times. If you are a person who just wants all their stuff to be in 4K with ray tracing, as previously discussed, and maybe doesn't like reading anything, then... Or maybe just doesn't have a visual imagination. I don't mean to frame it like it's a weakness or anything, because it's not. Some people just interact with things differently. I have a fairly visual imagination, so if you tell me a word, I'll picture it.
Yeah. And be a good way to escape during these days as well. Just, headphones in, getting into that world.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your world, whatever you create, yeah.
So I think it's really interesting. It's called Ord, O-R-D. It was previously available on Steam and it's out right now on mobile. It's a premium game. I think it's about $1.99 or something like that. Not too expensive, but certainly worth looking at, I think. Let's bounce back to you. You've been playing a bit of that Potter Bear Match 3 puzzler thing, right?
Yeah, Harry Potter Puzzles and Spells from Zynga.
It's another Zynga, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Is it a Zynga game?
It is a Zynga game, yeah. That's what you'd expect.
Yeah.
It's not for me. It's one of those questions. Am I the audience for it? Because Match 3 games, I really don't think I'm the audience. I don't think my age range is normally the audience for these sort of games. They typically skew a little older, I feel like.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's fairly universal. Everyone loves Match 3s, but it can certainly... It's one of those games like Solitaire and Minesweeper where there is a much older audience who play this stuff as well as a very easy, I would always come in and find when I was a kid, when the first PCs started appearing, I'd always kind of come in and find my friend's parents playing Solitaire or Minesweeper. something like that on the screens, because it just came with the PC, and that stuff is fairly universal. And the match tree ones, yeah, everyone kind of gets it.
But I am a Harry Potter fan, and therefore I do think it should appeal to me. But I wasn't hooked whatsoever. There wasn't anything for me to... I don't want to keep playing it.
It's a match tree puzzler, is what you're saying.
It is. I like the customization. I'll admit that. You know, you come in, you pick your house, Ravenclaw, of course, and then your wands, and then you can go into quite a bit of customization with your character. So nothing out of the ordinary, but, you know, your hair, your face and cloaks and everything and background, which was cool. Your default character is actually a person of color, which I was like, that's interesting, that, because for years it's always been, you know,
it's
the generic white guy straight away. And the Tony Hawk game did that recently, the Pro Skater. And it's just an interesting shift. And I think that's a good, you know what I mean? It was like, I have to actually think about this to swap my, you know what I mean, as opposed to just going the generic white guy and everything. So I thought that was just an interesting tidbit.
We are obviously programmed to be the white guy with the scruffy beard. The COD, the guy on the front cover of every Call of Duty, that guy.
Who is the default protagonist of
reality. Yeah. So yes, I agree with all that. But I've always loved any option for customization whatsoever.
Of course.
Weirdly,
the more the better.
I used to sit on... I fired up Mass Effect Andromeda, right? Which I didn't complete, and obviously I thought was a bit of a shambles compared to my beloved Mass Effect series. Because all this talk of Mass Effect remasters happening in October, finally. And the only remaster I care about. keep your bloody Mario. And I mostly fired up Andromeda just so I could make a new character. I really like character creation screens. And I've said before that I've played games for like a couple of hours and gone, nope, I made the wrong character. Going back to the beginning.
I've done that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I
did that with Fallout. I remember.
I love it. I love all the customization options and the building and the creating the individual thing, and like, so, and it informs the character itself and like all that stuff. So yes, when you are strictly limited as you are in so many things to just like one gender, one ethnicity, even just like height, one body shape, one any of it, like the idea of broadening this stuff is because it's a much more interesting landscape. It's an obvious thing, which is just like if you introduce like the whole diversity for diversity's sake, and everyone gets very frustrated about this kind of conversation. And it's because it's sometimes framed in a weird way that makes it seem, I think, aggressive or attacking or confrontational, or people react as if they're being attacked, which they're not.
It just needs to be made normal, just because
they look like me, so they get all offended. Because we're saying being white is bad. You know, it's a terrible conversation. People do it badly. But basically, a plurality of voices means more variety, means more interesting stories, means more chance to be surprised by a scenario or a situation, because it's come from the experience of someone else. It was a very different experience to you. And then they'll tell a story and you'll be like, damn, I have not heard that before. And that's it. That's brilliant. That's exactly what I'm looking for in all media. Tell me all your stories. It's why watching international cinema, it's why I like watching Japanese stories. Like, I watched a lot of anime growing up, and obviously lots of dubbed international features and that, because I'm a movie.
Films like The Parasite and The Farewell recently.
Yeah, they give you perspectives that you wouldn't otherwise see, and they will be pulling from archetypes and stories, things which are obvious to them that are not obvious to you or I. And it's the same thing in the West. We have a few like fairly standard stories, like rags to riches tales and things like that, which are like you can shorthand that stuff. People will show you a synopsis and you go, I know what that story is because I've seen it 1,000 times. And all other cultures have those stories as well, and they're different. And so when you see them, you're like, huh? And that's brilliant. That feeling, that kind of what is the surprise I'm looking for from any kind of interaction. Show me something new, for God's sake. So long story short, all of this is a good thing to be doing, especially given the current climate.
Yes. Back to Harry Potter. Yes, so just to say, it's a free-to-play game. So J.K. Rowling's getting no money on me. And
just downloads. She's just getting up now. Okay.
Just downloads. She's looking at them numbers constantly. If you like, enjoy Match 3 games and you like Harry Potter, it's probably for you. Otherwise, I don't think...
That's a no to both for me then. Easy pass for that one. Fine. Yet another Match 3 exists. Congratulations, the world. We've got a few other things here. So I've played a bit of something called Songbringer, which is a game that came out last year on PCs and has now popped up on mobile. Really weird, like good weird. So it's on the surface, you could say it's got the top-down dungeon crawling of an old-fashioned 16-bit Zelda or something like that, i.e., you know, exploring the screen, sword in hand, you know, move to the edge of the screen, whole thing shifts over to the next screen, exploring the world, the map starts appearing on the bottom of the screen as you're walking through. Yes, you can hack at bushes. Yes, there are enemies wandering around that you can hack at that respawn when you get off the level and come back in again. However, the world is weird, because on the surface you look at it and it looks like fantasy, but it's got strange sci-fi vibes, and it feels like your sword is almost part lightsaber from the noises that it's making, and the creatures are very alien, and the environments are, it's got this sort of like future, I don't know, like Flash Gordon, I want to say.
I like that. That sounds cool.
But weird, but like kind of this kind of like, the whole thing has this background thrum to it, and there's lots of sparkly glittery stuff, and you've got a little companion which is like your Navi kind of thing, but it's I think it looks like a drone, like that accompaniment character you get in Destiny. I forget what they're called now, little flying buggers who talk to you that used to be Peter Dinklage.
So it's like a mashup of lots of different pop culture.
So it's got a lot of tropes in it, but it's procedurally generated, so every time you wander into, you know, restarting the game, it's different. It's challenging, but it's, I don't know, for me it's the world that makes it interesting, because you're crawling through dungeons, there are shops where you can buy things from, you're collecting objects and using them to access other bits of the map, and it's got a lot of that familiar stuff, but the visuals almost have a more Capybara Games vibe to it. I'm going to go back to Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery again, where it's halfway between that and that pinky turquoise, top-down game that everybody loved for a while and has now got a Netflix series.
Not Grindstone.
Super Light Drifter? Super something Drifter?
Oh, Super Light Driver.
Something, whatever it is. That game. Yeah. It's like halfway between that and a Capybara game and a Zelda thing. But just the world, the atmosphere of it is very unusual and very like prominent in a way that I wasn't expecting. I quite like being in it. I've only done about an hour or two. I'm going to go back to it. But I would say have a look at that. Swordbringer is the name. I think it's about $4.99. It's not super cheap, but it was $20 on PC, so it's a lot cheaper than it is there. Controls feel fine because it's not necessarily requiring like pinpoint accuracy or light speed reaction, so I think you're okay with it. But go and give it a look. It's really interesting. I'll probably do a video. What else have we got? Okay, so we talked about the unfinished one. There's a video of that going up, by the way, at some point, I believe. Rip Them Off came out, which is something that we talked about on Launchpad.
I like the look of this. It's not coming to Android, though, I saw.
Just iOS. But this is a sort of tower defense game crossed with a Art Deco capitalist satire, I suppose, would be the log line, where you, instead of setting up like towers or turrets to destroy enemies, instead you're setting up shops to distract consumers. So you need to set up shops at different points along a street, and then all these folks are just wandering backwards and forwards. And the idea is if you've established a shop, they'll go into the shop and stay there for a bit and then go out satisfied. And that's the alternative to killing with a turret. And of course, as the crowd start to pour in, if you haven't got enough shops to distract them, they're going to wander off the edge of the screen and then game over. But clearly it's doing it's not too subtle, but nicely done, sort of satirical. This is all about the way that we kill you with consumerism. And the other thing is it's all done with symbols and glyphs. It's quite tough to get to grips with at first because there's no, like, it's not like text instructions. It's showing you, like, this symbol means this in this store with this character, go. And it's just images. And so it's real trial and error and working out, like, what that symbol means and what that shop actually does and how it interacts with the character and everything. So it takes a little bit of work, but it's very nicely presented. And we got it for the stream and we played a bit of it since. Interesting. I'm going to play more of this to actually make total sense of it. But currently out right now on iOS only, if you fancied giving that a bit of a look. I also played the latest thing from Colin Lane. Colin Lane, who was known for, like, the thing that got him known was wrestling. And he's done a lot of wrestling games since. And his latest is called Rowdy City Wrestling. And this is a, I guess, sequel, spin-off from Rowdy Wrestling, which came out. And it's the similar formula, which is a very sort of simple physics-based games in which you take control of your wrestlers, and it's literally just jump and attack. Those are your only two options, left and right. Super simple. The original wrestling game was really all over the place, like real like rubber band bouncy ball weebles going all over the place, and you could spin and smash somebody off of the screen and they fly down 20 seconds later, and like really goofy. It's gotten less goofy over time and more like, and it's by no means a serious wrestling game, but it's got proper wrestling moves in it. So by doing various combinations of your attack and jump. Mm-hmm. So if you attack, you'll just punch. If you walk over someone when they're knocked out and press attack, you pick them up, and then you can attack again to throw, or you can push attack and back and you'll kind of suplex them. And if you press attack when you're in midair, you'll do the kind of two-footed flying kick. But the similar principles apply in terms of they start throwing loads of wrestlers at you. You end up with big matches full of like, you know, tag teams of loads of people. And suddenly everybody's bouncing all over the place and it's chaos. So it's still got that physics stuff in, but it's got more metagame as well. So you go back and you start off in a wrestling gym, and you can go and buy power-ups for the next game if you want to. You can spend money on training and improving your character, and you go and talk to your manager to arrange the next fight. So there's a layer sitting above it that wasn't there with his really early games. Mm-hmm. And it's still like fun in that silly way. It has these light RPG mechanics, but ultimately it's still a more pared down, slightly more grounded version of what he's always been doing. And that thing is still like oddly satisfying mixture of having to have some skill, but also embracing the fact that it's going to be chaos.
Right, yeah.
And so it rides a fine line with that.
It sounds quite interesting, not to be fair.
I quite like these ones. I think they're fun. And they're free to download. It's iOS at the minute. Rowdy City Wrestling is the name of that one, if you want to give it a go. There is a bunch of other stuff. Swordshot came out, for example, which I haven't played, but one of our new writers who's turned up on PG, a girl called Jupiter Hadley, she's been playing this, and she's also going to start doing videos with us as well. So there's going to be a video of her playing this game, Swordshot, appearing on the channel. And this is kind of, it's like a boss rush game, as in there are enemies sitting in the middle of the screen, and it's almost positioned like a shmup. So it's black screen, enemy floating around, and you're a sword at the bottom of the screen firing stuff at this enemy, which is all very simple, apart from the fact that the enemy is surrounded by spinning objects. And you have to shoot so that you miss the object, so that it fires just in between, like a bullet going through a propeller blade on a hurricane.
And you sold that very well.
Thank you. And if you don't, if you hit one of the objects, that's like, I think that loses you energy. Okay. So every time you hit and you don't hit the main enemy, that's like, you know, knocking down your bar till eventually game over. So you have to be pinpoint precision perfect with your timings on this. I quite like the stylings.
Classic Atari game.
Yeah, it does look like a proper old-fashioned Atari game, and apparently it's quite brutal. It looks brutal. But you can see a video of that going up soon. Swordshot is the name of that one, and that's on iOS and Android too. There are a bunch of others that have been the past couple of weeks. Arachnopunk. I've got no idea what that is, but I know it's being reviewed at the moment. Terrafin, which I haven't played. We've got Swap Swap Panda, Mouse Busters, loads more. But I suggest you go and have a look at our new releases list, which we do on PG every week. And that has videos and a little write-up and information as well. Because we've run out of time. Boys and girls. So thank you, everybody, for watching. Good to be back. Matt, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, as always.
And we will catch up with you next week, as per usual, for another episode of the show. Go find some games, play them, have fun. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.